I ask this of you, to make them known. What is it that he is so definitely anxious to make known? The message of the existence of reservoirs of light, of the uttering of the word, of the illumination about to spread through east and west, or of the establishment of unity and universal peace. Perhaps all of these things. And whether the reservoirs of illumination be the latent but unawakened and therefore unexpressed spiritual strength and capacity of the races we cannot tell, but the uttering of the word and the coming of the revealer of the word brings illumination nevertheless surely to the hearts of men. It is true that great spiritual movements were initiated last century. One of the most remarkable of these had centered in the east round the Persian prophet Baha'u'llah. This messenger of God has returned to his own high place, but his message of brotherhood and love begins to stir the hearts of men. Many of his prophecies have already been fulfilled. The ideals of unity and brotherhood for which he stood are spreading widely, despite the war. His book of laws remains to be made known to the world, but the inspiration which called it forth is certainly divine in origin. Baha'u'llah's son, the explainer of the message, whose name is Abdul Bahabas, servant of God, still dwells among men, controlling and directing the promulgation of a spiritual movement that seems likely to encircle the globe with the great ideal of unity. And in the West there is, among others, the wonderful spiritual movement known as Christian Science. It is perhaps the most remarkable religious revival initiated during last century in the Western world, and its growth and influence, particularly in America, is little short of marvelous. The messenger tells us that the light dawns within individuals first, and that its radiance spreads, that outwardly its influence will show itself in many great reforms, and that great lamps will shine forth in east and west. Again I would say in private Dowding's words, vast spiritual powers are waiting to be poured forth. Create vessels for this purpose. Make yourself a vessel that you may receive the gift of the Spirit. I would close by repeating what he says with reference to love, which, in my opinion, seals the whole experience with the stamp of truth. If you would dwell in peace, learn to love deeply. Never cease loving. Love God by pouring yourself away. Love your fellows by giving them all you possess of light and truth. Love love for her own blessed sake. Such love will bring you nearer heaven. W. T. P. Bournemouth, 19th of March 1917. Part 3. The Messenger, 20th of March 1917, 8 p.m. Not long after Private Dowding's farewell visit, it began to dawn upon me that, as he could not return himself, he was trying to set up direct communication between the being whom he called the messenger and myself. I have therefore held myself receptive in the hope of securing some further news of my friend, and I now set down the message that has reached me. I will reserve comment until later. Yes, I am the messenger, and am speaking to you at your friend's special request. WTP, may I ask a few questions? Messenger. I am here to answer them. WTP, do you really see brighter times ahead for the human race? Messenger. My son, you need have no fear. Your world is now plunged in grief and chaos. The hour is dark, the outlook strangely gloomy. We can see the light behind the thunder clouds. Improvement in world conditions is already taking place despite the war. Few kings will be left in Europe or, for that matter, anywhere. Russia will lead her people toward peace and joyful emancipation. The illumination of a new day will be reflected in the soul of the Slavonic race and will become apparent everywhere. In time to come, the dawn will break over Germany and the northern peoples, sweeping before it the cruel darkness of ignorance and despotism. Tribulation will be great, revolutions must be expected, but nothing can withstand the light. Vast changes lie ahead. Were I to tell you of these miracles, you would not credit them. We see regeneration in Persia, transformation in India, uprisings in the Far East and new discoveries, revolutionary events in the New World, North and South, but the light will grow. France rises again, purified, uplifted, and becomes the inspirer of the world in arts and sciences. Ireland comes into her own at last and becomes the cradle for great men and women. England joins hands with many nations in raising the standard of unity and fellowship among the peoples of the world. She will be called upon to make immense sacrifice, east and west, but she grows to a new greatness through her acts of renunciation. Democratic republics will rule the world with free and peaceful intercourse between the nations. Peace does not yet come into her own, but the floodgates of God's love have been opened, and the divine power is for all nations. Fear not the breaking down of barriers everywhere. Make the paths straight. The Lord of Lords is destined to make a divine progress, and the ways must be prepared. WTP, this is all very wonderful. How will this new spiritual radiance make itself manifest? Messenger, you are already witnessing its leavening power. The world is not in such darkness as it was even 5 years ago, and this despite the warring of the nations. The light dawns within individuals first, and then the radiance spreads. Outwardly, its influence will show itself in many great reforms. In time, the very air will become purer. Climates will improve. Disasters caused by earthquakes, sea and air, will slowly diminish, but there will be cataclysms first. Conflicts between religions will cease, the bitterness of sect will die away. Women will hold equal rights with men. Great women, inspirers of the race, will rise up in East and West. Diseases, physical, mental, political, social, will gradually disappear. This must sound incredible to you. Remember that a spiritual remedy is becoming available for human sins and discords. It will veritably prove the elixir of the new age and will be within reach of all mankind. The Christ Spirit will dwell among men with healing in its wings. WTP, why do you tell me all this? Messenger. Eyes must be opened, ears must be attuned to the message of the coming day. Knowledge of the joy and peace that lie ahead will help you through these days of sore distress. By a consecrated act of faith, bring understanding and wholeness into your own life and the lives of those around you. WTP, will the barriers between this world and the next be broken down? Messenger. The veils are already thinning. As the race becomes regenerated from within, all need for barriers will disappear, and death will lose its awful sting. The piercing of the veils must come about through spiritual and natural processes of mind and heart, and not through the employment of magic, ritual, or trance. WTP, will a new religion become necessary? Messenger. The Spirit will re-illumine all religious faiths. The new religion will be one of service and fellowship and unity. WTP, and Egypt? Messenger. The great land of the pharaohs has still a part to play in the evolution of the race, but it may not be through British influence. There are vast preparations now being made for the enlightened progress of the whole Muslim world. WTP, how long will this take? Messenger. I am not a very high being, and to me are not revealed details of all these wonderful happenings. So far as I am allowed to see, peace will be re-established during 1919. Although actual fighting may end in 1918. It will take many years to bring poise and peace into actual and permanent being. WTP, who are you? Messenger. I am one of those commanded to direct the new illumination into the avenues leading down towards the hearts and minds of men. I greet and protect certain souls, chosen for special work, as they reach this shore. WTP, was Thomas Dowding one of them? Messenger. We met by what you would call accident. He is making quick progress, and his power of service to his fellow men will be great. It is often the most unexpected people who are chosen for important work. WTP, what about the Far East? Messenger. A great leader rises up in the time to come, and will avert many dangers. This one is long expected, and will bring about moral and social progress in China and elsewhere. The flames now visible between the Orient and the Northern Hemisphere of the New World will be transmuted, purified, and harnessed to finance. WTP, America? Messenger. Her hour of tribulation is at hand. A splendid destiny will come into view. So long as material wealth remains the idol, so long will the light be held back. You must expect revolutions of a peculiar order at no distant date. WTP, may we return to Germany? Messenger. Already the world faintly perceives the probable progress of events in that land. Germany as an empire ceases to exist, but as a federation of independent states. Her future and ultimate well-being are assured. The days are still dark, but remember this: the greater the darkness of the night, the greater the brilliance of the dawn. W.T.P. And how are all these wonders to be brought about? Are we to expect prophets and teachers in our midst? Messenger. Great lamps will shine forth in east and west. The period of revelations is upon you. The light is for the whole race, but individuals must reflect it within themselves, that it may become readily available for all. Rise up and proclaim the dawn of the new day. You can all become prophets and seers in this new dispensation. The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light, they that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them hath the light shined. Physical birth and death are not forever. Generation and dissolution as known to you will be transformed, transfigured. Herein dwelleth a mystery that cannot yet be unveiled. The road to its unveiling is the pathway of spotless purity. WTP. Will your words be understood or believed? Messenger. The wonders soon to be revealed are such that the people's vision will become unclouded and the sun's rays will shine through the minds and hearts of men and women. Then belief will become understanding. WTP. What about social evils and injustices, poverty and ignorance, lust and greed? Can all these become transmuted? Messenger. My son, have faith. Realize that the love of God is indeed all-powerful. The golden age will not be ushered in the twinkling of an eye, as is thought by some. The law of evolution must be respected and cannot yet be overruled. Extremes of wealth and poverty will disappear. Yes, this is so. The war itself has become a celestial instrument, as you have already been told. Governments will become simpler, less unwieldy, localized, filled with the ideals of justice and brotherhood. The oneness of humanity, as emphasized by the great prophet who manifested last century, will become recognized, and as a result of this, vast reforms, social and ethical, will gradually be introduced throughout the world. WTP. What about food? Messenger. Grossness will disappear. The race will learn to live more simply on the blessed fruits and herbs and cereals. Unless the race learns this important lesson, it will be found that the earth cannot support the populations now inhabiting it. Overeating and overindulgence in the sense desires must cease. The inspiration of the spiritual in life will take away the domination of the grosser appetites. Set the example. Fight the good fight. Increase your faith. To the God-endowed man all things are possible. WTP. Your utterances are so utopian that I fear it impossible to secure a fair hearing for them. Messenger. Compare 1817 with 1917. Compare 1900 with 2000 AD. The latter comparison is only possible through the exercise of faith and vision. Much that I have foreshadowed will have become visible before the year 2000 AD. My son, I give you my blessing and wish you Godspeed. NB. I have set down these very utopian sentiments and prophecies exactly as they flowed through my pen. But, although I am an optimist, I find it difficult to believe that the race is nearing the realization of all its ideals. The prophecies are interesting despite their vagueness and extreme optimism. It is useless for me to do more than place these prophecies before my readers, and allow time to set its seal of truth or falsity upon them. Certainly we live in strange times, when all things are possible, when even the wildest dreams are being fulfilled before our eyes. W.T.P. Bournemouth, 20th of March 1917. Part 4. Private Dowding returns. H.M.T. Indira, Mediterranean. 22nd of May, 1919, 10 a.m. I am allowed to return to you at last. Will you bear with me? There are many things I wish to say. I am not enrolled among those who are attempting to pierce the curtain that separates your world from where we live. This work is being carried on from your side too. When I spoke to you before I had just arrived here, I was confused, bewildered. I was filled with shame and humiliation. My life on your side had been so useless. The story of my passing across the barriers must have sounded confused, yet I am told that it has proved useful to many. I am glad if this is so. I have met a soldier recently arrived, who tells me he has read my book. He said it had been sent to him in Mesopotamia and was read eagerly by many of his pals. When he was dying of fever, feeling that his end was near, he now knows it was the beginning, he determined if life continued to search me out. And we have met. I will not repeat this soldier's description of his arrival here. In some ways his experiences were similar to my own. I was glad I could help him. It was this soldier who persuaded me to try to speak to you again. His confidence and the value of the previous messages inspired me to search you out once more. I asked the messenger if I might try to find you. He told me to follow my own instincts. Then I met your friend JC. He said he was in touch with you. He brought me to your boat upon the Nile. We met again and you promised to listen for my message during your voyage from Egypt to England. I am here. JC promises to keep the channel open so that my thoughts may reach you clearly. He works with a group of officers among those emerging from the mists of your earth. I will take up my story from the time I left you. There may be those among your friends to whom the story of my life and training here may prove helpful. I was bitterly disappointed when I could no longer see or speak to you. The mists rose up between us. Now I see how well it was. I was befogged, not fit to speak to you, unlearned and unresigned. Do not be afraid of disappointments. The personal self puts in the sting without which disappointments would not cause depression. When disappointments descend upon you, look up, until your vision clears. Then you will understand and be at peace. The messenger came for me. He told me he had spoken to you direct, that you had listened to his words. He said my message and his forecasts would be given to your world. I asked him to let me help break down the barriers. He took me to a hall of instruction that I had never seen before. The hall was crowded. Those present wished to learn how to return to the realm of mists between the worlds, to help new arrivals and to prepare the way for communion between souls already here and their friends on Earth. It will be useful to tell you how we were trained to do this work. I give you my own experience, not because it is special value, but because it is my own. The messenger led me to the center of the hall. There the teacher stood with pupils sitting around him, in ever-widening circles, in Eastern fashion. The teacher was dressed in a shining robe of flaming blue. When he spoke, orange and violet rays of light spread from him throughout the hall. He was an initiate. I hardly dared to look at him. I bowed my head. He took me by the hand. The messenger told him of my desire. I was led to a seat in the 14th circle and sat down. I cannot tell you all that happened and must leave much to your imagination. Do not be afraid of imagination. Correctly trained, it proves a useful servant. I found myself sitting in a row of soldiers who had come over early in the war. They were all strangers to me. Two sitting near me have become my constant companions, and we now work together in the mists. I will tell you their stories later. I promised them I would. They have been profoundly interested in those first messages I sent you. I will tell you what we learnt in the Hall of Instruction, how we were prepared for active service on the battlefields between the worlds. The teacher spoke to us through signs and symbols, by pictures and by color rays, and by what seemed like etheric photographs upon a screen. Our training was divided into three parts. It has lasted a long time and is not yet over, although some among us have already taken up our work. In the first lessons we were instructed how to discipline our own emotions and desires. This is very difficult. No worker is allowed to return into the mists for service until the emotions have been disciplined. We were instructed on the relation between the mind and the will. We were told how to empty ourselves until God's mind and will could be reflected through us without thought of self. It was very difficult for me. It still is. Oh, my friend. I have much to learn. I have gone such a little way since we met last. I am glad to be allowed to speak to you again. Never mind if people tell you that private doubting has no existence outside your own imagination. It does not matter. The message matters, fragmentary though it is. Give it and leave the rest. The teacher showed us his own mind. It was polished like crystal and reflected many pure rays of light from the celestial sphere. He showed us how to empty our minds of useless thoughts, poor ideals, and vain images. He showed us on a screen the mind of a man still living within the fleshly veil. Screen is the wrong word, it was an oval crystal globe in which we see the movements of chains of thoughts within the mind. This man represented a type. He was a successful merchant full of desire to make more money, ambitious, without thought for the spiritual, wider worlds around him. His mind revolved for us to study. There is one trail of thoughts I followed. If peace is signed soon, I will visit New York and open a branch there, that will come in useful when Jack comes into the business. Lucky he was too young to fight, wish the school bills were not so heavy, shall cut out the university now, wish I had a second boy, to many girls, it can't be helped now, must try and get them married soon. What was that Ada, his wife, told me this morning about young Mr. Morgan? Wonder what his father's worth? I might find out, used to be on change, but the war may have broken him, Johnson may know, Johnson hasn't paid that bill, must ring him up, wish I could afford a rest, this life is killing me and I cannot afford a partner or I'd take in gorge. His wife's brother, but then he's always been a rolling stone, suppose I must take him to the club, I promised I would. But he plays rotten golf and is not too presentable. Where did I leave my clubs? Must have been at Brighton. We'll telephone and find out. A man is given no peace and all those bills to meet on Saturday. Must see the bank again. Sir Warren's boy has been killed. Hard lines. Thank God my boy is safe at school. That trail of thought went on a long way. This man's mental life was made up of almost endless chains of thoughts leading nowhere in particular. His mind was filled with unessentials. He had no time for thoughts beyond those which revolved continuously around himself, his worldly interests, and his people. His was not a vicious mind, simply uncontrolled, self-centered, unillumined. It was shown to us as a common type. The teacher then showed us a similar mind belonging to a man who had just come across. He was lost in the mists. Some of the senior students among us went out into the mists to help him. He was a wanderer, without home or peace. It was long before the chains would be broken and the man released from the meshes of his mind. Now he is a student here, filled with the desire to make his life of service to his fellow men. By this and similar examples, showing the working of the human mind, we were instructed. Human willpower and its relation to the emotions, the cleansing of the human mind from sensuality, how to reflect within ourselves God's will, and through that will, and not our own, to harness and purify the emotional life, all this we learn gradually. Sometime you shall hear more. It is full of interest. I will return each day while the voyage lasts. 23rd of May 1919, 11 a.m. Before telling you about the second and third part of our training, I should like to talk to you on other matters. About yourself, you have come through the war not unscathed but safe. How wonderfully you have been protected. At one time I expected you over here, but it was a mistake. Then I asked to be allowed to speak with you again. So the war is over. Is it really over? Here it looks as if the struggle was still continuing. Not perhaps on outer battlefields but in men's hearts and minds. This struggle will go on for a long time. What absorbs my thoughts is the wonderful development of interest in what you call the unseen now going on in English-speaking lands on Earth. We hope to pierce the veils, to break down useless barriers, but this work needs careful training. I will speak more of this. Balanced minds are so essential. How rarely found. But who am I to speak? I know so little and am still a child. Many warnings have been given us as to the methods of our work. Some of these warnings I shall pass over to you. Make them known or the good work will be delayed. These warnings may be voiced by me through you, but they come from my teacher and the messenger. The messenger has become my guide. Am I not fortunate? He comes to me at times when I am resting. My life is now divided into three parts. One spent in the hall of instruction, another in the land of the mists helping to dispel the fog and tumult, and the third in the gardens of rest, where I have a little house and garden of my own. We construct our own surroundings here by the creative power of our own thoughts. You are doing the same, although it is not so apparent to you. I repeat, you construct your own surroundings even in that opaque and circumscribed outer world by your own thinking. Where do your chains of thoughts lead? Are they chains holding you down, or are they threads of light leading you upward? I still find myself involved in my own chains, the after effect of my useless life on Earth. Take warning from my experience. When I come again, I will tell you more about the school. 23rd of May 1919, 9 p.m. I will not give you an account of the instruction given to us by our teacher. I cannot remember it all. Some of the thoughts left in my mind as the result of time spent in the hall of instruction will leave their trace upon you and through you upon others who may read what you set down. Many of the lessons in selflessness, self-control, the relation between reason and intuition, between intellect and emotion, are lessons which we should have learned while still on earth. I spoke to you before about the supreme importance of emptying oneself of self in order to reflect the divine mind, and this lesson was drilled into us by the teacher as of immense importance. Only those of us who had achieved some measure of understanding were allowed to leave the hall of instruction and spend some time as novices among the workers in the intermediary realm. The teacher often accompanied us on those occasions. He showed how to protect ourselves from turbulent sensual and fearful thoughts which shot in and out among the mists like crimson darts. Until we could protect ourselves from such attacks, we were unable to protect others. The darkness caused by fear and hate and lust forms itself into pungent gases, I must use your terms, so that we often nearly lost consciousness. It is difficult to protect oneself against these dense vibratory conditions brought over into the mist realm by human souls in torment. The torments suffered by so many result from ignorance, from fear of the passage from one world to the next, also from what I call soullessness. This latter condition is only apparent and does not last forever. It is seen among those who have lived utterly selfish or evil lives on your earth. I do not wish to dwell upon such conditions. They are met over here by purgatorial tests which gradually purify and ultimately release the souls in torment. Purgatory, unlike hell, is a condition to be welcomed, to be bravely faced and lived through. I'm beginning to rise above my own purgatory, otherwise I could be of no real service to others. The second part of our training was carried on in the mists which hang over the great river separating your world from ours. All souls must pass through these mists on leaving their physical form for the last time. Three times I have succumbed to the influence of that dark sphere, my light has become shrouded and my mind darkened. On each occasion, two of my fellow workers carried me into a hall of healing where I slowly recovered consciousness and was able to return to my own home. Had I been selfless, the evil conditions could not have overcome me. We must train ourselves so that fear and sensual thoughts will find no response within our minds and fall annihilated by their own inherent lifelessness. Remember that all evil thoughts and forms have no life of their own. They disappear as soon as this truth is recognized and applied. The task of workers in the mists is to destroy the apparent power of conditions created by discordant human thinking, to light up the avenue leading them from one world to the next with the torches of love, truth and wisdom. These avenues need not be full of sorrow, fear, and darkness. They must become illumined by the true joy of life and understanding so that the sting of death shall disappear. I have more to tell you about this region. Many still in the flesh are called upon to work there with us during both waking and sleeping hours. I want to impress upon you the importance of such work. Next time I will speak of the third portion of our training. 24th of May 1919, 9 p.m. Beyond the hall of instruction, a great avenue of trees leads up a mountainside. Upon the hill is set a mansion known to us as our Temple of Initiation. When the group or circle to which I belong had been tested in the mists and had been taken through the underworld, where further tests awaited us, the teacher called us together in the hall of instruction, and were each given a new robe to wear, a sign that we were on the path toward the first gateway of initiation. This language is symbolic. A thread of actual events runs through the symbolism. I wonder whether this has any value for you? I fear to be misunderstood. The conditions of life here cannot be explained in terms of time, space, or form, as you know these. Set down what I tell you, pass it on if you feel able.